session number 9893, reel 4.
Brigadier Montague Champion Jones, reel 4. You said that during your six-day walk you were running short of food, but what were you eating anyway?
We started off with... we only had an iron ration, which we'd, so to speak, gone into battle with. I don't remember whether we managed to pick up any food before we left that village. I don't remember doing so. And it consisted of the standard army ration chocolate, a large slab of that, and I think probably some biscuits, I don't really remember. On occasions we dug up a raw potato from a field and ate that, which was not very edible, and that was all we'd had, I think. We were getting quite hungry, really.
Had your training equipped you for this walk?
Not a bit. The only thing I was thankful for afterwards was that during our lunch hours, instead of sitting in the mess with our feet up and smoking after we had lunch in Arras, I always went out for a walk on the cobbles, which meant that when we came to walk into Germany, my feet were fairly hard, because a lot of people suffered very badly that way.
During your 6 days on the run, did you meet any French people?
No. Only the people when we tried to get food from them who wouldn't, from the houses, who didn't want us, the last thing they wanted to see was us. Because they're afraid of the Germans, I suppose. I don't know what their attitude was to us, apart from that motive.
And you generally travelled by night?
Always. We didn't risk... There were so many German troops and tanks about, you couldn't possibly travel by day. We averaged, didn't average much, about 6 miles a night, I think, for six nights. That's 36 miles, which is fairly good going for, I think, for country you don't know, laced with barbed wire fences and things like that.
Did you know where you were heading for?
Oh, well, we knew roughly what direction we were heading. We were heading for the Somme, and I had some ideas, not knowing how thoroughly the Germans would have covered the thing, of being able to find a boat and cross the channel, being a sailor myself. The other two weren't very keen on that. We never could ever put that to the test at all. But that's what we were making for the coast, and we knew that the 51st Division was... the Armoured Division was there.
What about overhead aircraft? Were there any?
A few around. We woke up that morning that we were taken prisoner. We were, in fact, woken by the German guns firing at aircraft. I don't know whether they're British or French. We never saw them. And while we were waiting in the wood the night before, an aircraft of sort was brought down by German gunfire. Again, we didn't go and look at that. It was some way off. We preferred to stay in our wood.
What was your physical and emotional state by the time you actually were captured?
Emotional state, I think we were really rather numbed. We didn't sort of, think much about it. We were just trying to hopefully keep going and trying to find some way to find our own troops. A very risky process in itself. We'd probably got shot up if we'd walked in on some outpost in the middle of the night. So really, I suppose, our fate was the best thing, even if it did mean 5 years inside.
Were you considering what was going to happen to you during the six days?
No, we didn't think about it at all and lived from day to day.
And what about your physical state with the walking and with...
Well, that's
food?
All right. Wasn't it? I think our colonel was... he's a bit overweight. I think he found it rather tiring. He found crawling through barbed wire fences with a pack on his back rather difficult. We helped as much as we could.
Did you ever consider splitting up at all?
Doing what?
Did you ever consider splitting up?
Oh, no. Not for merely three of us. You wouldn't want to. You helped each other in various ways. Three is better than one by yourself. You're just lost by yourself.
How did you react when the Germans walked in that morning?
We just stood there dumbfounded, I think, and handed over our revolvers. In other circumstances, one would have thrown the revolver away so they didn't get it. Mind you, they wouldn't have been much use to them anyway, because they wouldn't have had the ammunition and that sort of thing to fit the British revolvers, I don't suppose.
How did they treat you when they first took you?
Oh, very well, really, apart from being rather nasty over these dum-dum bullets. They just asked us who we were and what we were doing, then put us in a truck and sent us off to a place whose name I forget, I suppose about 10 miles from the north, where other prisoners had been assembled in a field. They distributed some cold beef, rather tough, and we lay down in a field for the night.
At what point were you interrogated?
Sorry?
At what point were you questioned about who you were?
Not till we got later on to Trier, a town, it used to be called Treves in the French language, on the junction of the Main and the Rhine. I think we got there by train, yes. We spent, after that night, we marched off, I think, in column fours. A rather tedious game, because it's so much nicer to march in step and march properly, whereas one became a sort of draggle. Some people not able to march properly, and no band or anything to march to either. I suppose we did about 10 miles a day, I don't remember. And then the next night we were put into a flax factory, and flax was very comfortable to sleep on. When you woke up in the morning, you were like a snowman covered with white fluff. And I can't really remember the rest. I don't think that journey is really worth commenting on very much. It is typical of that sort of a march into Germany. The worst times were the time when we eventually put into trains. There was one instance on the way when we were rather frightened, because we were assembled in a horseshoe-shaped field with a rising ground in a horseshoe, and they had machine guns up there. And a German NCO started swearing at us. They could swear. They could go on and on and on. And apparently our German speakers translated what he was saying. He'd had a brother or some relation who was killed in the Altmark affair in off Norway, where the British Navy had invaded Norwegian territorial waters and released a lot of British prisoners who were in their ship. Do you remember the story of it? So this chap was rather angry. We thought at any moment he might pull the trigger and let off the machine guns. But we weren't really used to German volatility. One of the great surprises of this march was to discover what one thought the Germans were, a sober, phlegmatic people, was their ability to go off the deep end and swear not only at you, in furious German, and the less you understood it, and of course we didn't understand it, the more fierce and furious this diatribe got. But we also discovered they could equally easily let fly at each other. But this thing is most extraordinary business. Not at all like what we thought the Germans were.
Were you all British people?
Yes. I think from that first night in the field, we had a lot of French with us too. We were much impressed when French did join us, by the fact that every Frenchman came with a nicely packed trunk or suitcase, carried by an orderly or something like that. They'd all been thoroughly prepared to surrender, whereas the British were just in what they stood up in.
Was there any question of any medical attention for those who needed
it? Wasn't needed, I don't think. We spent a night in a field. The three of us, one small blanket we'd been put in a German barracks the night before, and I'd pinched a small blanket from there. And as a case of when Pa turns, we all turn. And those nights were pretty cold.
How adequate was the food on the march? Hmm? How adequate was the food you were given?
No, practically none at all. I think it was partly that the Germans had outrun their supplies, and they were difficult enough in keeping the supplies of their own troops. They certainly didn't give prisoners of war very much. Apart from that one night when we were handed some beef in the field the first night, I don't remember really getting any food at all in the way. I suppose we got some loaves of bread or something like that. And we got some, the French population on the march gave us some eggs, raw, which was quite pleasant. I don't know. I don't remember much about food on the way. I do remember that in one of the trucks, the French population were detailed to give these crowded trucks with the sliding doors open in the middle to hand them some food. And there's such a squabble of Frenchmen reaching for it that they failed really to get any of it. And the only one of the British officers in this truck, who's lying on the floor, put his hand out beneath all the squabbling French and came back with a large pie. That was a minor incident of life on the ship, on the train.
Were you issued with water?
I suppose we must have had. We couldn't have been without all that time, yes. The rail trouble is what I was interrupted by Doreen coming past. The rail trouble was I think finding anything to was not being able to lie down. My mind went off then. Not being able to lie down, and we'd had to take it in turns to take standing duty, because there were too many. The label on the truck said horses 8, men 20, I think. Yes, perhaps a bit more. I don't know. We were certainly more than that in the truck. That was the worst part of the journey, because it's tedious. We went on a long, long way. And that brings us really...
How adequate was the ventilation when you were crowded?
Oh, quite adequate. It wasn't hot. It was still May, and that is nice weather.
You mentioned the French population. What was their attitude to you as you were passing through?
As we were marching through, they came out and gave us what food they could. They gave us eggs and things like that. It was a marching population. We weren't allowed to stop. And they handed anybody who got hold of one, got one, so to speak. And people who weren't agile enough didn't. That's what it really came to.
Did you know where you were going?
No. No, we went to Trier. Then we stopped again in Mainz, which is, I think, on the Rhine, if I remember rightly, too. And I think between the two we went by train. And we were questioned about our antecedents, who we were and that sort of thing, in both places. And it didn't really much matter what we said, I mean, you know, because if I told them the number of our brigade, they still wouldn't have known what it meant. And it didn't exist anymore anyway.
What questions did they ask you?
Who we were, where we were caught, where we were picked up, where we come from, and that sort of thing, what our regiment was. You see, I said my regiment was Royal Engineers, which would have put them off the scent as far as anything I was actually doing.
Did you tell them where you'd been?
Mm-hmm. Well, they could have, I suppose they could have would have known that from the units that picked us up, but as they said, they were busy getting on with the war. And what one German did say, you will find that your treatment gets worse as you get further back from the front. Because they got off. I mean, the people back there were not the sort of soldiers with any pride in their conduct. They'd been trained to hate and that sort of thing. But there was no real bad treatment at any time. One got rather frightened sometimes when some of us wouldn't do what they were told and played the silly arse rather. And one thought that they might lose their tempers and start shooting sometimes.
Were there ever any nasty incidents?
No. No, they were quite restrained. For you, the war is over, was the main cry. Many of us said nuts to that, or worse to that effect.
Did they speak English at all?
Yes. They always had somebody who spoke English to make contact with us.
Was there any sort of organisation amongst you prisoners at this point?
No, none at all. We talked about escaping the possibilities of that sort of thing. One had a mind one might hop off in a wood in a train on the way, but you had no equipment, no money. Everything like that had been taken off. It would have been a silly adventure to do anything like that, especially if you didn't know where you were. After escaping from Colditz, you had memorised maps and things like that. And they travelled by train to the places they want to get to, pretending to be foreign workers, which would account for their lack of German and things like that.
Where was your final destination on that train?
Final destination was a little village called Laufen, L-A-U-F-E-N, which was on the river Salzach, about 9 kilometres south of Salzburg, isn't it? Musical place, isn't it? Sorry about that. I always forget the name suddenly, just a critical moment. It's in Bavaria. And we were there for... I was personally there for about 9 months.
Was this a prisoner of war camp?
Hmm?
Was this a prisoner of war camp for British
It was a very big old building which had been used as a hostel for elderly women and that sort of thing before. And I think it's still gone back to that now. But it's a great big four-storey square building on the German side of the Salzach, looking down on the Salzach and into Austria. And our arrival there was rather grim, nothing very terrible, but we found ourselves very short of food, and we seemed to have nothing, potatoes, soup made from potatoes, most of which had gone bad because they'd been allowed to get affected by frost. And if you get a bad potato in your soup, and soup seems to be the only way the Germans had of feeding people on very short rations. And we took some time to get used to this. There were about, I think eventually after people, the mainstream stopped arriving, there were about, 1,200 people there altogether in a place that had held 400. And we had to learn to sleep in triple bunks and so on.
What was your physical condition?
Well, we were hungry, to say the least. After all, we'd done this long stages of marching or lorry driving or being driven in lorries, I mean, or the uncomfortable train journeys, and that's sleeping out in fields at night and so on. And I think the chief thing was how long were we going to be there. Some people said, oh, the war can't possibly last, the economy of the country won't stand for it. But one of the parsons who was sent to join us, the chaplains, was Dean of Peterhouse in Cambridge, and he was a great historian. He started giving lectures as to how Britain, the war must last several years, that Britain would hold out, as always, until it got allies, and then perhaps it might eventually turn the tables. But by alone, Britain couldn't do it, and at the same time, it meant that the war would go on for years. This, of course, was a very unpopular line of talk at that time, as people were saying, we were home by Christmas and that sort of thing.
Were you able to let people home know where you were?
Hmm?
Were you able to let people at home know where you were?
We were able to send off one letter card and one card, and one card a week and one letter card a month. But we had no idea how long they were, or whether they were getting home or not. They went through the Red Cross, of course, and through Switzerland. And I personally didn't hear from home until we arrived in towards the end of May. I don't think I heard till end of July, something like that, about 3 months.
What was your routine in the prison camp?
Mm. What was your routine in the prison camp?
Well, it started off with a parade, which was labelled as being strictly indisciplined. The British wouldn't get fell in. They made as much of a nuisance as they could of themselves, and the Germans were very cross, and whenever there's complaints about the standard of food, well, the more senior officer said, if we behave like this, you can't expect the Germans to respect you and that sort of thing. And the younger people said, to hell with that, we make it as difficult as we can for the Germans. And our protecting power were Americans, and they didn't understand this either. Until after some weeks, there's a young chap, I forget his regiment, was shot by one of the sentries. They had given out on parade, it is dangerous for prisoners of war to lean out of the windows, therefore if they do, they will be shot, which was a bit of a shock. And we managed to negotiate that the prisoner, that the sentries would shout a warning, Zurück, which means back, and if this chap didn't get back, then the sentry was empowered to shoot. This is not a new and awfully awful thing. In American Civil War, the same thing happened because of the dangers of exchanging contraband and that sort of thing, because there are new people coming in all the time. And the Americans in the North had this rule, and people were put in big houses that prisoners of war getting from the South, getting too near windows, could be shot at, keep them from jumping out and running away. Not that we were liable to jump out and run away, but the fear was that people coming in would be able to tie money or maps and that sort of thing to a piece of string which could be drawn up. That was the chief reason. I don't think anybody ever did do that, but still.
Was this man shot dead?
He was, yes. I can't remember his Christian name. Is Lieutenant Dees. Yes, the sentry shouted, and he didn't hear him. He didn't hear him. He was shot. Well, after that, that incident, we heard that the German command would try to cover this up by creating some sort of incident in which there would be more shooting, and they could say he was shot in this rowdyism. So we decided we would behave absolutely correctly, and we stood to attention whenever a German sentry came in. We didn't speak, we didn't say anything, and I've never seen anybody so frightened as those Germans. You could see it all over. They didn't know what was going to happen. And because for once the British had observed a strict military discipline. The one thing they wanted was the most awful thing for them. However, that's a short and rather very sad incident. And after 3 days, we decided it's no good going on. And so the Germans were greatly relieved, and we went back to a normal state of British indiscipline.
Did they have any other forms of punishment?
We had cells. All prisoner of war camps had cells. You could have what is called Stuben arrest, which means room arrest. Actually, you couldn't arrest anybody into a room of 100 people. So, in fact, they were put in a cell. Anybody who escaped, otherwise, I don't think there was any form of punishment. Or
what about the general insubordination? Did they punish that?
They couldn't, really. It was just a matter of hanging on until people got tired of it. But we've soon found the German leg was very, because they were so anxious to prove that they were not barbarians, which they thought we thought they were, you could always pull their legs and get away with murder, really. For instance, we didn't see much point in saluting our enemies whenever we met them. So people didn't. So they said, they complained to the senior officer about this, that we didn't salute German officers when we met them. They said, well, you see, the British Army, we lost most of our hats and caps in the war. And the German officer, we don't even salute our own senior officers in the office if we aren't wearing a hat. And so they said, well, then when you pass us, you should bow. And so Next complaint was, your officers are bowing to us, but they are making a mockery because they are bowing right down to the ground. That's the sort of thing that went on. You could, throughout the whole of the time in Germany, you could pull their legs and have rather fun, up to the point when perhaps it got to a stage when they looked like starting shooting, in that case you stopped. Anyway, I mustn't dwell too long on that because that's only a short period at the beginning.
Was there any organisation amongst the British prisoners of war? At Laufen?
None at all at Laufen. I think the senior officer took charge of escaping or something. And for the rest, we used to get people who had some experience in civil life to give lectures and talk and that sort of thing. And we used to have discussions. We'd rather be back at school and things like that. Red Cross parcels began to come in somewhere about November, I think. Then things got better. And we were able to buy, a paint box and some paper from through the canteen. In those days in Germany wasn't so short of materials and stuff. We really could buy quite a lot as far as our German pay would extend to.
What was this German pay? German pay, what was it?
Oh, it was supposed to be the same as by the Geneva Convention, it was supposed to be the same as a German officer would be paid in his own rank, same rank. I don't know what it amounted to in money at all, but we were given little things called Kriegsgefangene Geld, which printed pieces of paper which could be exchanged outside. You could use that to buy stuff through the canteen or stuff that you ordered. And we didn't really go much on how much it was. We really had no idea what it was worth in terms of money. We got a few compass from it. And we could buy beer, and there was a canteen. And one got into trouble there because the German measure in a litre jar included the froth on the top, which in German English pub doesn't. And somebody was heard by the barman, German barman, was heard to say it is a schwindel. And the German barman leapt over the bar and seized on this chap. And he didn't hit him, but he was very, very cross with him. After that we learned. But those are all minor details. Anyway, towards the end of the winter, we had a very muddy exercise ground, and I was detailed to get a party to try and make this more manageable and drain it and that sort of thing. And while I was doing this, underneath where I was working, some chaps led by a mining engineer from South Africa were digging a tunnel from what was called our theatre out across the exercise ground, tended to go outside. But at one stage, I knew nothing about this, I was digging drainage ditches around the path, and I was told to stop because the bottom of my ditches was going over the top of their tunnel, and the water, my drainage water, was falling down into their tunnel, which wasn't very good. I think I got under suspicion of having something to do with that because my policies were altered, and we got from some Germans some concrete pipes to bridge this bit over. That's all right. And however, they later on discovered this tunnel just before it got outside the wire. I think it was when it got outside the wire. The mining engineer was in it. Nobody else was found in it. And he was sent off to Kolitz at once. After some cogitations, the German said, this tunnel is so beautifully constructed, it must be the work of experts. And they thought of it, said, well, the Royal Engineers are the experts. So they said, fall out all Royal Engineers, and about 11 or 12 of us were all sent off to Kaunas.